From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Moving day at the U.S. Open. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, Casey Richards with you on the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Tour Edge. And the show always presented to you by the Glenview Park Golf Club. As the U.S. Open continues to roll along here, there has been no shortage of conversation and drama surrounding this event, as obviously the course conditions have been a huge topic of discussion. The amount of rain that we got, the field that's still in it, the leaderboard right now, all of it has been very interesting. And we've talked about how this is a wide open event, guys. But one of the things that I'm looking at for tomorrow, because it's wide open right now, but it almost feels like if you don't make your move today, you are going to be very far out of it. Like, you have to not necessarily go low today, but you have to at least hold serve. And while the window of guys that can win it right now is very wide, I think it's going to be a very narrow field that has the possibility of winning tomorrow. What do you guys think? We'll start with you, Mike.
I totally agree. I think if you don't do something today, it's too late coming in tomorrow. If you're not within, I'd say, 3 to 4, maybe 5 shots, you have a very, very good chance. But I think today, Oakmont is going to further weed out and send a lot of people somewhat packing already for the rest of the week. And we're going to, drill this thing down to just a handful going into tomorrow, basically. And you and I talked about this, Tyler. I would not be surprised if the winner wins by 2 or more shots.
Tyler, look at what Scottie Scheffler's done a couple times this year in terms of surging at the end of the third round to put himself in prime position for the fourth round. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the PGA Championship. He did the same thing at the Memorial, where he closed his third round with a few birdies. And, yeah, I think that's just such an advantage to not only put yourself just in a good position in the leaderboard, but give you some momentum heading into that final round. And, look, obviously he's the best in the world, and, not everybody can flip the switch like he can, but that is kind of, I think, the model, to your point, and the template is close the third round strong and be ready to hit the ground running come Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know if I can see a scenario where the winner of this event doesn't go subpar today. Mm-hmm. I feel like you almost have to have a red number at the end of the day today for your individual round today, not necessarily for the whole tournament, but let's say Brooks goes 2 under today or 1 under today. He'll be right in it. He may even be leading by the end of the day, the way that this course is set up so far in the early going. Like, if someone like Rahm or Morikawa or Scotty go 2 under today, they'll be right in the thick of things here. And I think sets you up for the ability to go out and win this thing, because you look at the names that are ahead of guys like Rahm, Collins, Scotty, Brooks. Some people say, it's kind of a fox in a hen house, like, looking at what's in front of you there, because you've just got the ability to feast on guys with inexperience, guys who have not closed majors before, and couple that with the damn near impossible course conditions that we're seeing right now. You could just win the mental battle and cruise your way to winning a U.S. Open. I shouldn't say cruise your way to winning a U.S. Open, but you feel like, from an outsider's perspective, they almost would have cruised to it more because the rest of the field might fall back over the course of these next 36 holes.
Yeah, and mentioned,
to your point, Tyler, I think Sam Burns is a guy that's going to be really interesting to watch today. He had the big round yesterday. How does he follow that up? But the two guys you just mentioned, Rahm and Brooks, are the two that I'm going to really keep an eye on because of their pedigree. They've won majors. They're big game hunters. Both are as strong as an acre full of onions, and these guys know what it takes to win on Sunday, but more importantly, how to set up Saturday for Sunday. And I would agree with you, Tyler. It would not surprise me to see Brooks Koepka up atop the leaderboard at the end of the day.
I saw somebody make the point with Brooks that in this current iteration of him, I guess, post move to live, it's always when you kind of let your guard down with him that he seems to pounce, right?
It's funny you say that. Like, I thought he was going to miss the cut in this tournament. And then, boy, has he proved me wrong. He went out there, was fantastic Thursday, and then he's top 10 right now.
Yeah. 2023, you know, he didn't really seem to be in a great spot. I mean, there was that whole Full Swing episode about how kind of downtrodden he was, about how he couldn't find his game. Wins the PGA Championship at Oak Hill. You know, had been struggling a little bit this year so far, not really performing well in the other majors. Finds himself right in contention this week. So more so than anybody else on tour, I think he kind of adopts that mentality that you see in, you know, most other sports where maybe he performs best when he is doubted, when he does have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. That doesn't always work in golf because you can't necessarily, you know, channel aggressiveness or anger to perform well, but he seems to be able to, I guess. So
it's funny too, like the way that Brooks Koepka goes, I thought he was trending the way of Dustin Johnson, where he was pretty much done with everything. He was going to be out of it. It was no longer going to be a big Brooks Koepka season. It felt like he got his one with the PGA Championship a couple years ago, and then you sort of saw him fall off, and it felt like he had lost his love for the game per se, but he was just kind of become a little complacent. And now all of a sudden he's working his way back in. He's currently sitting top 10, and if he won this thing, I don't think it would shock anybody.
No, I don't think it would at all. And in fact, I think we're starting to see the true colors of Brooks, and I think he's getting ready to come back to the PGA Tour. I think he gets fired up when he gets around these people. When he goes back to live, he just kind of gets melancholy. And it helped him early on and save his career. But I gain a sense of a guy that's impatient and can't wait to come back.
I'm with you. I mean, we've talked about this, too, when he's been at the majors. He's not sporting the Live Golf logos and stuff like that. He goes Nike, hat and shirt. It's nothing Live, unlike what you'll see with other guys like a Bryson or pretty much everyone else off of the Live Tour. They've all got some sort of Live representation. You would have no idea that Brooks Koepka played on the Live Tour if you went to an event and saw the way that he was outfitted.
Definitely. Tyler, just looking back at, you know, the previous U.S. Opens here at Oakmont and, you know, your thesis that the winner might, you know, create a little bit of a gap. You know, go back to 2016, Dustin Johnson, he won by 3 strokes, really 4, considering that he was given a penalty stroke. So, you know, the last time this championship was contested here did kind of play out as you suspected, where there was a crowded leaderboard going into the final day. I think Shane Lowry was actually winning, which, much different event for him this time around.
But, very surprising.
Yeah, but DJ was able to kind of do, you know, what you described in terms of, you know, be kind of the last man standing, so to speak. So there's precedent for it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It's usually how this goes with events like this, because Shane Lowry is a perfect example. Did anybody get more frustrated at this event than Shane Lowry? I mean, seriously, you see him throwing a mic. It was comical. It got to the point where it was starting to just be comedy. But you know he has a temper. I just didn't expect to see it to that degree.
And when he picked his ball up on the green without marking it, I mean, that's something that, you know, you don't see junior golfers make the mistake. And he was just so, you know, not into it mentally by the end of the round that he, you know, all he could do was really laugh about it. And then, you know, as golf loves to do, of course, I think it was in the first round while he's going through it, he holds out for eagle, right? So it's...
Yeah. Hold out for eagle and finish 9 over for the day.
Right. Patrick Reed, I mean, he had his albatross and I think made the cut on the number. So, it's just wild to see the play that so far this weekend.
No, it's been a fascinating one. All right, when we come back, we'll be joined by PJ Clark from the Fried Egg. He caddied for Zach Blair during his practice round and also was in the same group as Bryson. So not only did he walk the course, he caddied the course. And it was his first time ever caddying golf round. It was for a PGA Tour professional. So we'll get his thoughts on what he's seen, his experience as well from Wednesday, and just what he's made of the whole course in general. All that coming up next. This segment's been brought to you by Tour Edge.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
The segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. We'll talk with PJ Clark from the Fried Egg in just a moment. We'll also be joined by Dennis Walters, member of the World Golf Hall of Fame. Also had an ace this week up at Strawberry Creek that, Mike, you were witness to. We'll be joined by him in just a little bit. But yeah, looking forward to those conversations. As we sit right now, moving day at the U.S. Open, Sam Burns, your leader, J.J. Spaun, one stroke off the lead at 2 under, and Victor Hovland, 1 under, and then you've got two-way tie for fourth with Adam Scott and Ben Griffin. Boy, this would be quite the year for Ben Griffin if he were able to pull this off, because he has had one of those just kind of out-of-nowhere seasons, and all of a sudden he's got multiple wins on the tour. He looks good doing it. He's been in the thick of things in some majors as well. It's been quite the banner year for a guy like Ben Griffin. And I get that you see some of these pop-up champions or guys who maybe are starting to trend up at the U.S. Open. We've seen them with guys like Matthew Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark. Could Ben Griffin just be the next guy like that?
Yeah, and he's only 29 years old. I mean, he's, you know, just kind of entering the prime of his career. To your point, Tyler, he finished 8th at the PGA Championship, which was his first appearance in that event. As we talked about, this is his first U.S. Open. Still never played in the Masters. Obviously, he'll make his debut there next year after winning a couple times this year. But, yeah, seems very affable, too. You know, seems to perform well on social media, and I've seen him make, you know, various podcast performances and things like that. So I think it wouldn't be the worst thing for the game of golf for somebody charismatic like him to be kind of a surprise winner.
Yeah.
Ben Griffin to me is a guy that makes golf great, and why golf is so interesting to follow. Here's a guy that actually walked away from the game, went to University of North Carolina, who's got one of the best golf programs in the country, and felt like he couldn't make it, so he goes out into the real world, into the finance world for a while, and realized that being behind a desk is worse than being way right or way left of a fairway. So he decides to go back out, corn ferrying it, and earning his way back. He was dead broke. But last year, he played in 35 of 36 events. He reminds me of the old school golf professionals who played every single week and never complained. This is just what we do. And I think he actually enjoys it. You know, it's not a burden. It's not a chore. He absolutely has fallen back in love with the game. He's got a passion for it. And the dude has won a ton of money. And I know he's on the radar for Captain Bradley for the Ryder Cup. And you know what? If he were to win somehow, he'd be a great champion for Oakmont, because I think he's kind of shows that hard work, persistence, a little blue collar, sweat and equity, and that's what Pittsburghers are all about in that Steel City. So I think he'd be a beloved champion.
You know, it was funny. He made a joke yesterday in his post-round press conference talking about, yeah, Keegan said it was me, Mav, and I forget who the third guy was, but whoever goes the lowest today is getting that spot on the Ryder Cup team. And listen, those guys, the way that things are shaking out right now, like, are deserving of being a part of that mix once we do get to September. So I would not be surprised at all if Ben Griffin was a part of that team, and he certainly would be a good fit. Just looking at the way that the course has played so far today, 17 guys already off and running. Only one is under par right now, and that is Matthew Fitzpatrick, a one-time U.S. Open winner just a couple of years ago at the Country Club in Brookline. So he is the only one under par. He's bogey-free through six. He's got the birdie on the par five fourth right now. So the course certainly playing tough. You look at some of the scores out there. I see a 3-over, a 4-over, and a 5-over already, and each of those guys have only played no more than 8 holes so far. So it is playing difficult out there. It's going to be a bloodbath. You're going to see the carnage today, and I cannot wait. Once we get to about like 11 o'clock today, so basically once we get off the air here, that's when you see the big boys start to tee off, and that's when we'll see what this course is really made out of today, because I'm very intrigued to see how guys like Scotty and Rahm and Morikawa and Terrell Hatton and Brooks and even the guys at the top, specifically the top three guys and Sam Burns, J.J. Spaun, and Victor Hovland, how they respond on a day like today where if you come away even, that may be one of the better scores we see all day.
Justin Ray from The Athletic put together some good stats about the first couple rounds and just the difficulty level with which the course was playing. So through two rounds, the field, the combined 1,462 strokes over par. 10 players at plus 20 or worse for the two rounds, the most through 36 holes of a U.S. Open in 17 years. And then this one kind of stood out to me, and we've talked about the rough and how it impacts approaches, but also around the greens, you know, some of the lies these guys are getting when they miss the putting surface. It seems like when you watch the professional golfers, they're automatic getting up and down, and, mm-hmm. and the short game in a lot of ways is kind of what separates them from even some of the better, you know, amateur golfers and lower level professional golfers in the world. So the PGA Tour average for scrambling percentage is 60% for the year. 38.5% so far this weekend at Oakmont. So just shows that these guys are forced to hit shots around the green that they're not normally used to, and, you know, some are handling it better than others.
And I would expect that percentage to continue to drop over the next 2 days. It's just watching in the practice rounds, I watched Phil Mickelson 3 times mm-hmm. leave the ball. Right, I mean, he was literally feet off the green, and he just went right underneath it 3 straight times.
Yeah.
And this is the best wedge player in the world.
Two days after he pulled out that right. insane chip during the live event.
Yeah, 100%.
It was incredible with Phil. Like, the way that he was playing, you see him, he was, like, tied for 18th for a while. And I feel like the latest iteration of Phil Mickelson, you almost feel like, you know, I don't really root for Phil until I see him like doing something. And then it's like, all right, I'd love to see Phil make some noise, get a top 10. Obviously, you're rooting for him to win it because he could complete the career grand slam. But I look at what Phil's done, and I was, once I saw him like tied for 18th, I'm never going into a tournament feeling like, all right, I'm rooting for Phil. But once I see him doing something, that's when I'm like, all right, I really want to see Phil do something here. I think that would be pretty cool. And then, unfortunately, he fell way off at the end when he goes 4-over over his last 4 holes.
6 second-place finishes over the course of his career so far in the U.S. Open. Obviously, some of those more heartbreaking than others. The one where he lost to Jeff Ogilvie, obviously, comes to mind the most at, I believe that was at Winged Foot. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be kind of a what-if, and then, you know, and then you kind of look at some of these other guys that have 3 legs of the career grand slam as well. You know, Jordan Spieth. Are we going to be talking about him in 15, 20 years, you know, not being able to claim that elusive PGA championship? It's, you know, obviously a very tough feat to accomplish. That's why so few people have done it, and that's why everybody was so enraptured by Rory accomplishing it a couple months ago.
You know, we haven't talked about Jordan Spieth, but he's quietly still in this thing too. I mean, he's 5-over right now, and we've kind of said it's wide open. As long as you have a good round today, you'll have a chance tomorrow. If Jordan Spieth can play right around par, maybe even get a little under, probably at, when you're 5-over, you probably have to get to under today. You probably have to get 1 or 2 under if you want to be in the hunt come tomorrow. But like I'd imagine tomorrow, you know, because we kind of went into today saying, all right, there's probably about 55 or so guys that could win this thing based off of the scores that they had. Tomorrow, it's probably shrunk down to maybe 15. Obviously, we have to see how today plays out, but I'd imagine that number shrinks at a pretty high clip heading into tomorrow. You got to be probably within, because I think tomorrow's going to be not necessarily more about scores. it's going to be how many people do you have to leapfrog
right.
to get there,
right.
more so than how many strokes you got to make up on the field. Because you could have one guy just absolutely blow up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's why it's going to be so important to have as few people in front of you as opposed to as few strokes in front of you.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. Jordan, 100%. Really, so far this year, he's been performing solidly. I mean, he's hasn't had any particularly notable results that stand out above the rest. But I think compared to a few years ago where you were seeing him, miss cuts every once in a while, he's at least found a little more stability. You know, it seems like every weekend, there's some funny clips that surface on Twitter of him, exhausting his caddy in terms of some of the decisions he makes and the thought processes he goes through. But yeah, I mean, he's a very solid player and has as good a shot of anybody this weekend. Cool shot there they just showed of Rory's wood off the fairway and just the
weather conditions out there.
Yeah, and how the water and the mud kind of exploded when he hit it.
You were bringing up, Casey, the ticket situation there and how Oakmont has said anyone who goes out or doesn't want to come on Saturday today is entitled to a refund. Mike, did you guys ever do anything like that for some of the bigger tournaments that you were a part of in directing?
No, we never really had to have that situation because a lot of our championships were always in August, and we didn't encounter the type of rains that you traditionally get in this part of the country in the late spring, early summer, as we're experiencing now. So we were traditionally in the dog days of heat and summer, and that's really what a lot of people don't quite understand. They always think the U.S. Open's so much harder and set up harder than the PGA. The difference is the rough. When we were in August, it got so thin because that's what your front lawn does over the course of the summer. Yeah. So right now in June, everything's robust, and that's why the Open is able to create these conditions. And now with the PGA moving to May, they do have that opportunity depending on where they go geographically speaking. But no, we never really had to do that. I don't know that the PGA of America would be too excited about refunding ticket revenue. But, fortunately, we've never had to find ourselves in that situation.
When Casey said it, too, it struck me as odd because, I mean, we're talking about Oakmont, like, kind of the only show in town, especially this weekend. Yeah. Like, there's not a whole heck of a lot to do out in that area of Pennsylvania, and you've got one of the biggest shows in golf coming to your town. I can't imagine people saying no to this, even with some of the weather difficulties. It was very odd to me when he brought that up.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think they sold too many tickets, and I think this is their way of realizing we're not going to be able to put a quality experience together when you start taking out all the muddy, low-lying areas. And again, with the hills that they have there, that means they have low areas, and those low areas are going to be unwalkable.
Yeah.
And
they've shown a lot of standing water on the course today.
Yeah,
too.
So what's happened is the amount of square footage for the spectators has been reduced, and it is going to be really, really sloppy, and it's going to be difficult for the spectators. And I don't know if the listeners really truly understand that there is a interstate, a turnpike
yeah.
that goes through this golf course. And so the way it lays itself out, folks, is you play one, then believe it or not, you walk across six lanes of I-76, or what they call the Pennsylvania Turnpike, to get over to holes 2 through 8. Then you cross back over the bridge and you play up 9. 9 shares the putting green with the 9th green. And then 10 through 18 are over still on that side of the turnpike to finish out the course. Well, it's funny. This U.S. Open almost didn't even occur at Oakmont, because in the late 90s, when the USGA was looking at sites and venues for the future, they had a meeting with the club officials at Oakmont. And they said, look, folks, as much as we love Oakmont as a USGA club, we don't know that we can come back here anymore. The crowds have just gotten so big, and the bridge is acting like an hourglass. It's becoming dangerous. It's really impeding the progress of getting the players across, carts, people. You got to build another bridge if you ever want to consider holding more USGA events. And they were in line to get the 2003 Amateur. And so the only way they could do that was to get a second bridge built. And so a week after the USGA visited, the chairman was playing with Stan Druckenmiller, who is a very, very wealthy finance guru of Wall Street. And he's a member at Oakmont, and he's also a member at Augusta. And he was listening to the guys tell the story, because when they got to the turnpike, they were crossing the bridge, and he was telling them the story. And when they got to the other side of the bridge, Stan turned to the guy and goes, well, how much is this going to cost? And they said, well, we've already gotten some bids. It's $750,000. He reached into his golf bag, pulled out a check, and wrote the check and handed it to the guy and says, will that cover it? And he said, yes. And so then the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania hit him with a $75,000 fee because they had to shut the turnpike down for a said number of days, which loss of revenue. So they picked up that charge as well. So it's nice to have members like that.
Yeah, certainly helps. Certainly helps. All right, when we come back, we will talk with Dennis Walters, member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, and also owner of a hole-in-one this week. I don't think anyone else on the show can say that. Mike, yeah, but you bore witness to it, so we will talk with him when we come back as the Adaptive Open goes to Fox Bend Golf Course next week. So all that and more coming up next. This segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
You by Republic Bank, Tyler Aki, Casey Richards, and Mike Gilligan with you on the CDGA Golf Show. Let's head on out now to the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above, where we welcome in World Golf Hall of Famer Dennis Walters to the show. Dennis, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Greetings. Thanks for having me on.
Dennis, Mike here, and it is so good to have you here in Chicago. And I have to tell you, throughout my journeys in my life around the world, I have met a lot of motivating and inspirational people that have come over adversity and are very resilient. And I have to tell you, you are definitely one of them. I am impressed by you each and every day I spend with you. Can you share with the audience the accident in 1974 that left you paralyzed from the waist down? And what was the turning point that convinced you never to give up on this dream of golf? Because when this happened, you were an aspiring PGA Tour player that all of a sudden at the age of 20 had to redefine his dreams.
Well, that's it in a nutshell. I was close to getting on the PGA Tour. I finished 11th in the U.S. Amateur, played college golf at North Texas State, had an accident 1974. I'm paralyzed from the waist down. I have no idea what to do. The one thing I knew for sure was that I loved golf so much, I couldn't see living my life without having golf in it. I just had to figure out a way to play. And everyone told me it would be impossible because I couldn't stand up, and of course they were correct. So I started hitting golf balls sitting down. I started hitting balls from my wheelchair. We invented a swivel seat that's on the passenger side of a golf cart, and that's how I got back on the course. I was trying to cope with what I consider to be a hopeless situation, and when I was in the hospital for 4 months, I was in rehab for 4 months, and I never thought I was actually getting out of the bed. One day I got out of that bed, and I promised myself I wasn't giving up, I wasn't quitting, and I was going to try to figure out a way to play golf. And that's how I did it. I never thought I could make a career out of it, but this is my 48th national tour. I've made over 3,000 performances, and I have just tried to make the best of it.
Dennis, for those listeners who haven't seen you perform, can you shed a little light on what your show entails and what you hope to achieve and leave the audience with?
Well, my first criteria is I want to hit great golf shots. I also tell some bad jokes. I've got a dog with me at all times throughout my career, and the dog's the opening act in the show. This one here that I currently have, number five, his name is Gus. His real name is Augusta, but we call him Gus, Gussie, Gus Man, a few other things I can't say on the radio. And I'm doing that, telling my story, and I'm encouraging others to reach for their dreams, strive for excellence, and do something positive in their life that they didn't think they could. So it's great golf and an inspiring message. And I've been fortunate enough to perform over 3,000 times. I am having a great month of June, thanks to Mike and the CDGA. Everyone at the CDGA has taken great care of me. We've got a busy schedule. I've done some shows. I've played some nice golf courses, great golf courses. Looking to play some more. I'm trying to prepare for the Chicago Adaptive Open, which I think is sensational and very forward-thinking of the CDGA to have this tournament. I played last year, and the tournament is growing as adaptive golf is growing. And, you know, I was playing adaptive golf long before it was even called anything like that, but I'm happy to see it grow. I'm also preparing for the National Open, which is going to be the first week in July in Rockville, Maryland, put on by the USGA. Like, we got the US Open here this week at Oakmont. This is our US Open for people with disabilities. So I'm very grateful to have had this opportunity, and we still have a couple more weeks to go, and I just am very appreciative of all the nice things that have been accorded to us.
Dennis, you were inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2019, and I'm sure that is one of the highest honors you've ever had, but you are also one of only two people to have won the Ben Hogan Award, the Bob Jones Award, the PGA of America's Distinguished Service Award, and to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. What do all these recognitions represent to you in terms of your journey and contributions to the game?
I think that on October of 2019, I got a phone call from Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player saying, "Congratulations, Dennis. You've just been elected into the World Golf Hall of Fame, and we were your advocates."
Wow.
And I immediately started crying. When I came to there, I said, "There's 16 people from all over the world, and I said, "You two must have done some sales job on these people." I said, "Because I bet half of them never even heard of me." And Jack said, "No, that's not true." He said, "Dennis, every person in that room had heard of you, but by the time we got done, they heard a heck of a lot more." So to get, I think to get recognition from your peers and your heroes and people in golf industry and sports writers, if they give you some sort of an award, I believe that you, in 99.9% of the cases, that you've earned that. And it's very nice, it's humbling, and it's coming from people in golf, and that, I think, is the most satisfying thing. I'm very proud of this. I mean, getting into the World Golf Hall of Fame is the highest honor in golf, and I never thought I would accomplish anything. I was just trying to cope with what I considered to be a hopeless situation, and I just kept doing it because I enjoyed. One thing I realized very early in this journey was that if you hit the ball right in the middle of the face, it still feels good. And that spurred me on, and I was very disappointed. I was confused, and I was upset because I knew the first day I sat in that seat, I would never play as well as I did before. And one day I had a talk with myself, and I said, I think I'm looking at this wrong. I shouldn't look at how I used to play, but how am I playing right now at this point when I had this revelation? And can I get any better? And when I started getting better, I felt better about my whole golf game, and that helped a lot. The other thing that helped me a tremendous amount, and it's very appropriate, this being the day before Father's Day, I'd like to wish all the fathers out there a happy Father's Day. But my dad played, and my mom as well, but since this is Father's Day, I'm going to concentrate a little bit more on my dad. My dad, he basically devoted his whole life to me after this happened. He went with me on the road for 17 years. He took early retirement, and almost every life lesson I learned to try and cope with this, what I called hopeless situation, I learned from my dad as we traveled thousands of miles across crisscrossing America doing these shows. So no one does anything by themselves. You have to have a good support system. You have to have love. You have to have people encouraging you. And I had all of that. I have a great sister and my mom and my dad. But in the end, the real bottom line is you have to do it. So you have to do it. You have to put in the work, the perseverance, the never giving up. And it's nice to have people around you that know that you're trying hard and they encourage you. And certainly I had that.
Dennis Walters with us here on the CDGA Golf Show. Before we let you go, Dennis, you had a hole-in-one earlier this week at the CDGA Member Day up at Strawberry Creek. You're the fifth of your career, I'm told. Like, does it ever get old for you? For a bunch of us here, we're searching for our first, but you have five now in your life. Does it ever get old?
No, of course not. And I've had two standing and three sitting. So I was tied for a while, but I got this other one Monday. And they're mostly luck, but, you know, it sounds good. And this one was not luck. It was a perfect shot. And
it really was. I saw it, Dennis. That thing was flushed. It was one of your best that I saw all day for sure, and it had the result. But, Dennis, yeah. What advice would you have for people that are facing adversity, whether it's in sports, golf, or just in general in life, who may feel that their goals are now just out of reach like you did? What's your message?
Well, this is the way I look at it. This is one of those things that's easy to say and hard to do. And most things that are worthwhile and are monumental or important or whatever you want to say are like that. I mean, it's easy to say this stuff. But the one thing that I try to do in my show is, when I first started doing this, I did it all for myself. And I since learned very early, right from the beginning of doing my shows, people were telling me I was giving them hope, inspiration. And I said, wow, you give somebody hope, that's a big deal. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to use my own personal example to show people what's possible, not only in golf, but life itself. And I'm trying to use my example to show people that with hard work, perseverance, they can accomplish whatever it is that they want to do. And the big caveat is if you have a dream and it doesn't work out, that's okay. That's perfectly fine. And the solution to that is easy as well. Get a new dream. And that's exactly what I did, and that's exactly what I recommend to people, while in the same instance I am encouraging them to reach for those dreams, strive for excellence, and do something positive in their life that they didn't think they could. Every show I do, I challenge people in the audience to do that, and I tell them, never let anyone tell you that you can't do something or that your dream is impossible. And hopefully some of this will sink in and people will continue to do what it is that they want to do, whether it's playing golf or any other endeavor that they have. And I know one thing that's comforting to me is I wanted to make it through this world on my golf skills. And in the end, I did. But along the way, I've had the opportunity to positively influence others, maybe only by a little bit, but that's made it even better.
Dennis, appreciate you taking some time with us this morning, and we look forward to watching you play out at the Adaptive Open, Chicago Adaptive Open at Fox Bend next week.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Got a few more days to practice and get in the swing of things, make a few putts. And I'll tell you, if you watch the U.S. Open, you can see how tough this game actually is.
Yeah.
These are the best players in the world, and they're having a lot of trouble.
Absolutely.
And, anybody who plays golf knows how difficult it is, but if you watch the best and see them struggle, then you can maybe take a little heat off yourself.
Yep, no doubt about that. Thanks for the time, Dennis. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis.
Dennis, yes. Walt.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much.
Dennis Walters, World Golf Hall of Famer, and he will be participating in the Chicago Adaptive Open next week out at Fox Bend Golf Course. We will go around the CDGA when we come back. This segment's been brought to you by Republic Bank.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Thanks to Charlie Bevins for producing today's show. The segment brought to you by French Lick Golf Resort. Real quick, Casey, what do we have going on around the CDGA before we get on out of here?
Busy couple weeks here in the Chicago District, perhaps the busiest two-week stretch of the year. So firstly, we've got a great auction going on right now. It closes at, I believe, noon tomorrow on Father's Day on U.S. Open Sunday. It's our CDGA Foundation auction, so everything up for bid. The proceeds benefit the foundation and the great work that we do for individuals with disabilities, veterans, and youth. So there's items in there, golf for three with Andy North at Rich Harvest Farms. I know everybody heard about the Augusta experience that Mike had this year. You can bid on having that experience next year. Tickets to Bears, Cubs, White Sox games, and then rounds of golf at all sorts of private and public clubs. So if there's a certain private facility you've been wanting to get on, check out the auction. If you go to cdga.org, it's linked at the top of the homepage, and lots of great items for bid there.
For those unfamiliar, by the way, with Mike's Augusta experience, private jet down to Augusta and then went to Thursday.
Yep,
of absolutely. The tournament.
Awesome.
And then from an event perspective, this week we have the Illinois State Women's Amateur Championship at the Grove Country Club, which leads into the aforementioned Chicago Adaptive Open over the weekend at Fox Bend. The general public is welcome and encouraged to show up for that and really be inspired by seeing some of these individuals with disabilities play some absolutely fantastic golf. And then that leads into the CDGA Amateur Championship the week after that at Briarwood Country Club. So lots of time on the golf course for myself and Mike over the next couple weeks, but that's why we do this. We enjoy it.
Absolutely. All right, real quick, before we get out of here, I need each of your winners for the U.S. Open. Mike, who do you like?
Brooks Koepka.
All right, going with Brooksy. Casey?
I'm going to go Hovland. I just really like the attitude he's had going into this, and obviously he's got the game for it, so I'm going to go for him to get his first major.
I'm going to say big comeback day today for Jon Rahm.
Oh, I knew you were going to pick him.
I told you, it's the year of Rahm. I wasn't wrong. I was just early.
I know.
So we've got a great U.S. Open Saturday and Sunday ahead of us. Everybody enjoy the golf out there. Should be a lot of fun. Should be a lot of carnage out there as well. And who knows, maybe someone out of the blue surprises us. Maybe we get Thomas Dietrich's first major of his career. Who knows how this is all going to go down. It should be an awesome final 2 days of golf. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back with you next week right here on ESPN Chicago. Peggy and Dion is coming up next. This segment brought to you by French Lick Golf Resort.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.